Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Happy New Year, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon. I wish I'd thought about this beforehand, but this must be our 12th
year.
Calendar year in which we've podcasted. Yeah.
That sounds about right. Each year happier than the last.
Anyway... Here we are again, and we are the only rugby podcast that's there for you 52 weeks of the year. One day later than usual because of the bank holiday that is New Year's Day. That is when we're recording this now, on January the 1st, 2024, with lots to talk about in the rugby dungeon, where once again, just as Christmas Eve, I've joined JB and Phil, who are both wearing Lycra.
Mm. Been for a run.
Been for another run.
We have, yeah. We don't want to make this a habit, do we? But, you know, we're looking for exercise over Twixmas, so that's exactly what we did.
Twixmas, is that what you call it?
I think that's what you call it, isn't it?
I've heard people call it Crimbo Limbo, which makes me want to wash my eyes out with bleach.
Yeah, Twixmas isn't much better, is it?
No, neither are satisfactory. Right, how are you doing anyway? Good Christmas and all that?
Yeah, good Christmas. Some great Premiership. I mean, credit where it's due. The Premiership has been great over Christmas. Mm. So, yeah, that's been my main present.
The top 14, not top 14, URC was pretty ace as well. There were some great games, and then I watched Munster v Leinster.
Which I heard was a cracker. Did you see that score?
It's JB scoreline, 9-3.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. It was quite entertaining in its own way.
There is actually a... URC game going on as we speak, and it's my beloved Ulster who've travelled to Dublin to play Leinster and are currently 12-0 up.
Wow.
Come on.
Are Leinster playing a full-on team?
No, it is not.
What a shame.
It's not a full Leinster team.
Well, I think we'll be talking a lot about team selection and weakened teams during this podcast. That's what I suspect.
We will definitely be mentioning it. Definitely.
I would imagine we will probably talk about the impending England training squad ahead of the Six Nations, which Steve Borthwick is due to announce 1st of January. So today's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I think he announces that.
Mm.
Which is interesting as well. And like you say, lots of great rugby to talk about. As ever, if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so dead easily on email, contacteggchasers@gmail.com. And there's been a bunch of... In fact, oh my goodness, how many emails have we had?
Exactly.
Wow.
Loads.
I'm just looking at the subject titles for them. One... Like Cy Carroll, 3-9 classic for the ages, a man after your own heart, JB.
It's what the people want.
Yeah. Plastic pre-trash in your homes, plenty of it.
Oh, I'll tell you what. So I've got a free house for a week, and I've gone around with two bin liners. It's taken me all day. And in one bin liner goes rubbish, which we have a lot of, just strewn around the house, of course. And the other one is kids' stuff, goes in the other bin liner. And the second bin liner goes into their playroom, and I just dump it out. And I close the door. And
no, never worry about it.
I will not see that for another week. It's glorious.
I tell everyone, just buy a book or nothing, because these kids don't need... Or Lego is the other option. We got loads
nothing
of...
Nothing like standing on cold Lego on a winter's
day. Oh, yeah. We got loads of cheap plastic tat, some of which we don't know who sent it. We got... Two Play-Doh kits.
Great.
which is both lots of cheap plastic tat,
yeah,
and stuff that gets in the carpet and gets spread
right
everywhere. And
slime.
I don't even know who sent it us, so I don't know who to tell off for sending us cheap plastic crap.
Yeah,
so maybe that's by design. It'll be someone that's getting their own back on you. I reckon with that one.
If I find
someone
out, I'm
really
gonna
hates you.
Yeah, if I find out, I'm going to anonymously...
Boss or something.
I'll anonymously send their children a drum kit.
right, and New Year's, all good? Did you do anything?
I went to bed at 10 o'clock last night.
Wow. I wish I'd gone to bed at 10 o'clock.
I feel so smug for doing so.
Oh, you mean you missed the fireworks presented by the Mayor of London?
Oh, my word. I saw that this morning. I thought, I'm so glad I'm off Twitter. I'm so glad.
Yeah.
Although I haven't been off Twitter entirely. I've been sneaking back on, slowly sneaking back on, bit by bit. And it's convinced me I shouldn't go back on. Because do you know what I've noticed this week? The New Year's honours list. Has anyone paid any attention to this?
To keep it podcast specific, there are some rugby-related additions to the King's New Year's honours list.
Yeah. So Stuart Hogg got an honour for services to rugby, which, from what I can see, is entirely deserved. Entirely deserved.
Over 100 caps for his country. a three-time British and Irish Lions tourist.
Yeah.
Captain
for his country.
Probably led the best Glasgow Warriors team that there's been.
European and Premiership champion.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, he is, isn't he?
Came to Exeter to win things. And won things, yeah.
Like, I can't see the controversy over him becoming whatever he is, giving his, as it is, services to rugby. But because rugby is rugby, and some of the people that follow it, they're not fans, but some people that follow it are utter scumbags, all they want to do is mention his private life. Now, it's very public. I don't want to go into what he's done in his private life, good or bad. But since when did being a family man matter to any of these people? Because do you know who was a good family man?
Go on.
Israel Folau. And absolutely nobody cared about being a family man then, did they? They just wanted to hunt him down for, you know, the sake of it. There's so many people that just want to trash rugby players for no particular reason. And what I don't get is this infatuation with anybody in the public eye must be a role model in every single aspect of their lives. And they're not. Stuart Hogg is a great rugby player and he should be remembered and known as a great rugby player.
I would say it entirely depends on how much of a virtue that individual makes of
this is a great
that
point,
specific
isn't it?
Part of their mm-hmm. life or personality. If you never see their family, they never talk about what a great dad role model is, it's completely irrelevant. If that was front and centre,
so true.
Then you imagine that the sponsorship and endorsements that you get are predicated on that part of your life.
100%. So you see this with a lot. Well, Grift Nation are very good at this, of sort of angling their athletes to do social causes so they can lecture you. BT Sport is the most lecturing organisation on the planet. I mean, you just have to look at the things that Ugo talks about, or, you know, Martin Bayfield talking about bloody Native Americans. Things which have got nothing to do with rugby. So, you know, the Ugo one's really interesting because, of course, he got caught, maybe potentially, and this will come out in the future, not exactly telling the truth about racism. So, you know, when you are a hypocrite, it comes back to bite you. Stuart Hogg has never been a hypocrite. So, yeah, I think this is really important. And the other thing you've got to remember is, every one of your heroes, every single person that has achieved great things, is almost certainly deeply flawed in another plane. Because that's what it takes to be really good at something. You have to give up other things. I'm not saying, it's not justifying it, and it's not saying that you have to be a bad person, but almost every one of your heroes is completely flawed.
And, yeah, so don't tear down statues, add plaques to it, yeah. And celebrate Stuart Hogg for being a wonderful rugby player.
Which he is. Which he absolutely is. I mean, he's given me, God knows, how many joyful moments watching rugby.
Mm. Congratulations, Stuart Hogg.
Yeah.
Well done. Mm. And Bill Beaumont.
Yep.
As well as another one.
Services to what exactly? Well, you know, look, I might laugh and I might disagree with him, but I don't think you can probably argue that he has put in a shift. Even if it's not been a successful shift, he's put in a shift.
But it's not entirely unsuccessful, because there are successes within it. Like, I think generally the law variations at the elite game over, say, the last 10 years, they've been done well. There's some good, like the changes to the scrum, positive. Mm. The simple change of forcing the nine to have to pick the ball up before it's out to stop the question. Right? Things like that may generally enhance the game. The things that you don't really think about.
100%.
I'm not saying that is entirely Bill, but it's under his watch that those things have been done. There are also unsuccessful things during that period.
I don't know what C stands for in CBE, but because I know Order of British Empire. commander of the British Empire?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Anyway, Kevin Sinfield is one of those now.
Oh, nice. So on my
commander
podcast, which I've not done for a long time, called Pilot Episodes, I think every one of those guys is either a KBE, no, a CBE or an OBE.
Wow. Mm. Very cool.
And yeah, Beaumont has become the Knight Grand Cross.
KBE.
What does the Grand Cross mean? I was going to say that, because I know there is a...
It means you get to go to the meetings with the rest of the Illuminati.
Don't you know there's a layer of knighthood or damehood where there's 20 at any one time that are
is
on...
Is this the Garter or something?
Yeah, I think it might be the Garter, and there's like... I think there's 20 spots, and you can only become one if you're nominated to be one or chosen by the monarch. When someone dies, there can only ever be 16 or 20 at any one time.
I don't believe you get to that level of society and die. I think when you get to that level, you're basically a lizard person. You're an immortal lizard person.
I think was Elton John the most recent addition to that?
Well, I think what they really mean, Tim, is that they leave the public stage, but they never really die.
I don't really know what it means. I'm trying to look up it here, but it...
It's
the highest order in the British Empire. So there you go.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
It opens lots of doors to you. But I guess that's the thing you get when all the doors have already been opened.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how that works.
It's not bad from a lad from Fylde.
Yeah.
From Blackpool. It's impressive, isn't it? I mean, what has he done? He's spent his life administrating a contact sport and playing a contact sport.
He was from fairly humble stock. Played rugby in on the Fylde coast, captained England in the 80s, a real era, and then he was captain question of sport, in charge of world rugby. Incredible.
Hopefully, Augustin Pichot will be next. Because do you know he's going to run again?
Is he?
He is.
Yeah, but Augustin Pichot, he's someone who I look at him as being one of those potential hypocrites.
Go on.
Because he preaches one thing and then he flies around in a private his private jet off his dad's money. His dad is like a mega billionaire.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I did not know that either.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I do think that having someone from South America would be really important because I think the South Americas is where rugby's going to thrive next. Mm.
It's definitely a frontier in rugby. I'm pretty sure Augustin Pichot's dad is like billionaire, like one of the richest people on earth.
Do you think he's richer than... Okay, let's play a game. Is he richer or poorer than Ben Earl's mum?
Ben Earl's mum? Who's Ben Earl's mum?
Ben Earl's mum is apparently made the Times Rich List.
Really?
Do you not know this?
No, I did not know that. All right.
Poorer or richer than... Oh, what's his name? George Worth's dad.
What does George Worth's dad do?
I think he is a part owner of 777 Betting.
Oh, wow.
Also may well have been on the board of Stoke City. Do you want any more of these, or shall we just...
I'm trying to think. Who's other... I wonder how much money Nick Kennedy's mum earned from all her books.
Or Luke Narraway's dad from Butchery.
Similar
amounts.
What is fascinating is that you look online and you cannot find anything about Augustin Pichot's family. But
well, this might be very similar to the search that certain rugby YouTubers did on Courtney Laws' family, but it didn't really stop them from reporting it, did it?
Well, I've done the same thing, but I think my facts are correct. Whereas that particular rugby YouTuber could not have been more wrong.
Why don't you credit search him? Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Not in any way suspicious.
Oh, long-time listeners of the podcast will understand what we're talking about. Right. Come on then. Let's just quickly chalk off this, because it'll be the biggest talking point in amongst rugby, certainly in England, in the next week. New faces that you want to see in Steve Borthwick's Six Nations training squad.
So well, we spoke about the new members or new faces, young faces that Stephen Jones thought might come into the squad. Young Harry Thacker, 29-year-old Harry Thacker. Chris Foy actually wrote a really good article start of this week with actual real young players in it, which is remarkable to see, actually. So, I don't know. The answer is...
It doesn't have to be young, necessarily, but just...
New
faces.
I don't... Who's playing well? Why don't we talk about losers as well as winners? because I think there are some absolute nailed on losers after this week. What's his name? Will Stewart?
Stewart, Bath Titan prop.
Yep, him. I think he's going to struggle for a position, which is a real shame because England need him to become good very quickly. He had a horrible game this weekend. So that'd be one. Boys that are playing well. I would have said Max Ajoma before this weekend.
Nice half breaking offload for the try.
He's not got that finish, unfortunately. He's been playing well, but he's just, I don't know. There was something not quite right about that performance.
We did get a little email on this, sort of touching on what you were talking about with the... Oh, no, it was a different game. Don't worry, ignore what I was saying.
Okay. Who would we like... So I'm thinking of young players. Let's just think about older players who might be different.
So I think Tommy Freeman will get back in the fold.
Yeah, he's just a class player.
George Furbank probably deserves it. He probably deserves it.
Yes.
Phil is modelling his facial hair around George Furbank.
He looks amazing with his tash.
Who re-signed a contract today?
Do you notice how Phil tacitly called himself, said he looked amazing? Which you do, and I can say
George Furbank looks amazing. I do not look amazing.
sure, mate. so George, let's just talk about George Furbank. He gets back in the squad. Do you think he's a realistic alternative to Freddie Stewart? Or is he and Freddie Stewart?
What I will just put out there is I don't think we have necessarily seen the last of Marcus Smith in a 15 shirt for England. I don't think Steve Borthwick was going to invest that much time and effort in it and just to cast it aside because you know how much he loves George Ford.
Not even considering that it was a World Cup and
there's a limited squad. I think you're probably right there. And but I think what that experiment did demonstrate is the open-mindedness that there is a different way to approach the fullback position for England. And actually, I think one of the things we discussed during and around the World Cup was that the role of fullback, England are kind of behind the times a little bit. Because the way that fullbacks are that second distributor, playmaker role, Thomas Ramos for France and...
Boden Barra, Willy LaRue, Damien Willems.
Hugo Keenan plays that role. Ireland do things a bit differently. Matt Hansen, as we've already talked about before, sometimes steps in there. There's a bit more fluid there.
But King Horn can do it as
King
well.
King Horn does it for Scotland.
Okay, so if you look at Stewart, he matches none of those descriptions.
No, none.
No.
So the closest thing to him... Second Israel Folau mentioned of the day, but that would be Israel Folau, I'd say.
Yeah.
He's quite Israel Folau-y.
Mike Pike going back to the mid-2000s Canadian fullback.
That's a great
show. I love that reference.
Furbank, on the other hand, okay. I mean, he's not Thomas Ramos, but shades of that. It's certainly shades of Damien Wilhelmser, because he is a fullback that can play fly half.
Bit Alex Good.
That's good, yeah. So he does sort of fit the more modern mould a bit easier.
Yeah, and he's the kind of player, I know we're almost 4 years out from a World Cup, but he's the kind of player who's very useful in a World Cup squad because of his versatility. Like, he can... was it the 2013 Lions tour when Stuart Hogg was the third fly half, or was considered an additional fly half, and Furbank is more of a fly half than Hogg ever was.
It's a good point. That said, he has had a go, and that whole test match animal thing may be a reality, but he has been playing well for his club. This is one of those things. I don't know how much weight do you put on the club performances, because if you were putting weight on the club performances, we talked about him last week, Joe Thock and a singer would have to be back in.
Definitely. He has to be given, and he has got the rarest of all things, which is the elite size. And that counts for a lot. So Joe Cognacinga would be one.
It is a good question though. Like, how much do you put on the club performances, especially when the Premiership is weaker? Whether it's that much weaker, but it is weaker. And there's also the rested teams which we've seen this week. So how many of those? How many of those? And I don't know the answer to this. How many of those Cognacinga tries from this year have been scored against weakened teams? Bath are playing full strength and they're playing against whoever second string.
I'd love to see Murley involved. I'd love to see him involved. I think
he's just been injured, hasn't he?
Been injured.
Missed the first half, came back, played a couple of games, got injured again.
Up front, It's a little bit more tricky.
Yeah.
I've said it before, but I'd love to see Curtis Langdon have a go at hooker. That'd be my choice. There's another hooker that impressed me this week who escapes me. I'll come back to that. I think the second rows are pretty much set for a generation, are they not?
Chesham and Martin between them.
Yeah.
As the second fiddle to Itoje.
Yeah, I mean...
Maybe who, one of them on the blindside flank.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That seems pretty set. Unless there's somebody else, which I've... I mean, I thought Hugh Tizard would have kicked on and become an England international regular, but he hasn't. There's not really anyone else I can think of who's going to touch those two boys.
I'd say a second row who's been playing really well this year, but he's not eligible, is Dino Lamb.
Yes.
I think he's been really good this year.
Was he not? Was he not the player that... Do you remember... Quinn's had a strength and conditioning coach who was a strong man.
Adam Bishop, I want to say.
Yeah. I'm sure Adam Bishop was asked, which of the Quinn's lads is most likely to be able to be a successful strong man? And the answer was Dino Lamb.
Hmm.
I'm sure that was the case.
It wouldn't surprise me.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy. And he's good as well. He's athletic, deceptively athletic for someone.
A bit like... Pelledri, in the sense that he blossomed, he had lots of potential, but really blossomed in his mid-20s, by which time he'd already committed to Italy.
Italy, yeah.
What about Finn Smith? Would you like to see Finn Smith in?
Personally, I'm not bothered, because I think we've got two great fly halves.
Mm.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, if you want to put him in the squad, so he's around the place, I think he'll probably be in the wider training squad, yeah.
Yeah.
But I also know he's on Scotland's radar, as is Tom Roebuck.
Yeah. Yeah.
For Sale.
There's a couple at Sale. And Aaron Reid as well.
Aaron Reid, I think, might be a Scotland. But so there's a few other nations sniffing around. It's the same like Faye Wabosi. He's probably going to choose Wales, you would imagine. He's grew up in Welsh. He is Welsh.
I don't know about that. I wonder if you go to Exeter on the understanding you have to be EQP.
Exeter have said they're not going to stand in his way. And they didn't with Thomas Francis.
Thomas Francis.
Chris Chinzer.
David Jenkins. Yeah. Dorman.
It is a bit of a risk for Exeter, though, because they're building their foundations on, or building their house on, some Welsh foundations that could be whipped from under them.
Yeah, well, if anyone's learned anything, it should be that taking young men from the Premiership where they're thriving and trying to put them in the absolute hellhole, which is Wales, doesn't work.
Yeah.
What about Rhys Carey? Anyone seen him recently?
Do you think? The WRU are going to learn that lesson?
I don't know. I mean, they are a very dynamic and evolving organisation. But it's just not going to work. But Rob Baxter has got them playing like they are. You have got to be an incredible idiot to think that you'd be better taking them and putting them in the Ospreys.
100%.
Or the Dragons, for God's sakes.
Yeah, or preventing them from playing, when they're playing their best rugby, it's Exeter, preventing them from playing like Hawkins.
Mm. Yeah, great point. Great point.
It would be nuts to do that.
So England need props. So I'm trying to think who Steve Borthwick will select.
Well, Joe Hayes, he's got a bit of experience with him. 150 games for Tigers now, so he might be a guy that they look at. I like him. Trevor Davidson at Northampton seems to be doing all right.
Northampton scrum has historically been woeful.
And now it's less woeful.
Yeah, it is no longer woeful.
No one is more grateful for that than Matt Ferguson, who can now get on TV and not be embarrassed every time he speaks.
So, Aaron Painter, who was part of the woeful Northampton scrum, is looking good.
That's a good one.
And he is a big boy.
Just whilst I'm thinking about it, have you heard about Finn Smith's offer from Scotland, allegedly?
No.
So the offer from Scotland is, if you join Scotland, we will guarantee you a matchday spot. How unhealthy is that?
Surely that's not true.
I've heard.
I just can't believe that.
How else do you get an English lad who is playing great for an English club? Well, he's leading the Premiership, as things stand, to go and travel to Scotland to play for Scotland. How do you do that?
So you're going to get whatever the Scotland fee is.
$5,000 or something like that?
Yeah. You've got a high shot of getting this. You've got a low shot of getting $18,000.
I don't know if he's got a low shot. I think if he carries on playing like he is for Northampton wins something, then he's got a very good chance.
He would currently be...
Third choice?
Fourth choice if Faz was about.
Yeah, but he's not, is he? So he's third choice.
He's currently third. Yeah, probably third choice.
And a lot of people might look at Marcus Smith and think, well, we've tried that. It didn't exactly work. Let's try something else.
Mm.
So he could be second choice. I mean, who knows? But I don't know if Scotland saying, yeah, we'll definitely get you in the match squad is just a good way to go.
Yeah, I can't believe that is what they've actually said.
Wouldn't surprise me.
It would surprise me.
Well, bearing in mind that England rocked up to Carrington and said, what's his name, is a 50 cap hooker. Just give him 50, we'll guarantee him 50 caps.
I mean, again, I would be surprised.
You and Ashman.
I would be surprised if those were the exact words.
Those were the exact words.
The precise words.
You are a 50 cap hooker. All right, well, give me 50 cap, give me 50 caps worth of money up front. And you win because of inflation.
So yeah, I would be surprised if that was the exact words. you have 50 caps already.
Yeah, I don't think those were the words. No, those definitely were not the words.
So just rattling through a few names. I want to see Henry Slade back in the fold. Definitely. Yeah, you're right. On the front row is the tricky one.
Seth Atkinson. I know I talk about him every single week. Yeah. Seth Atkinson.
He's not been fit though, has he?
Was he not playing this week?
I think he might have played.
Oh yeah, he was playing.
He played
this week, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, right, good, he's back. Good.
So one that has been talked up, that we, if we're going to talk about some games, he had at least a tough couple of scrums, and it's probably too early for him, is Sales, tight head, and also can apparently play loose head, Opoku for Joe. Mm. He had a really tough couple of scrums this week, which is probably slightly concerning for Sale, but very positive for Northampton.
Well, on this one, this does segue now with the email I was going to read earlier and I got the wrong team. But Tom Chapman emailed, contactedchasers@gmail.com. Afternoon, lads, great pod, blah. Isn't it interesting how the Sale scrum, which appeared, according to the referee, to demolish the Saracen scrum last week, has, again, according to the referee, been repeatedly hinging and indulging in foul play this week against Saints? I didn't agree with many of the decisions last week, admittedly, as a one-eyed Saracens fan. However, it just showed what a lottery it can be at scrum time. So it's a fair point.
Yeah, it is a fair point.
Yes, it can definitely. And part of the games is that your ability to manage the referee, which I think there is no finer example than the World Cup semi-final, England versus South Africa, where the game theory employed by the South African scrum was absolutely superb.
Yeah, so I've got two thoughts on this. I was going to bring up that exact point. So your point is, South Africa did not put the pressure on until they gave a good picture.
Until they actually needed to.
Yeah.
So they didn't, the whole of the first half, it was only the last 20-30 minutes that South Africa started turning the screw. They just showed a good picture. And then because England were 9 points ahead, they had to roll the dice, and that's when they turned it up. If South Africa had been 9 points ahead, I'm certain we would have seen set scrums the whole game.
Yeah.
Because they never would have had to risk it. But when they had to risk it,
they didn't do that against France, did they? So that was a very close game. Well, they're all close games, actually. But they didn't do that against France. In fact, they actually called for a scrum off a mark.
That was because they had to apply pressure.
Because France didn't hardly made any errors and weren't putting the ball out to touch for lineouts, mauls and things. So yeah.
And the other way of looking at it is you go out early doors and you try and dominate. So in the referee's mind, you are the dominant scrum, and you tend to get a lot of penalties go your way if you are just dominant. Where it becomes a real lottery is when one team just carries on collapsing, because it's very hard to work out who is hinging, who's stepping back, who's quote unquote boring in. You just don't know. So if you come out and you are the dominant scrum off the bat, you get away with a lot more stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you see, sort of tying into that, did you see Warren Gatland between Christmas and New Year came out and said the things he would want to see changed in rugby? And one of them was, I think he said, get rid of the mark. We don't need it now. And a lot of people have interpreted, he said, get rid of the mark because we don't need it now. And he was talking about reducing the number of replacements. And there's quite a lot of people that took this as kind of South Africa just won the World Cup, so taking away things which South Africa are quite good at. So trying to reduce the number of scrums, trying to reduce the impact of the bench, which also would massively benefit Wales because they don't have the depth of other nations.
So I'm just trying to think this through from a purely entertainment point of view. So if Gatland's trying to make the entertainment pitch that we get rid of the more. I'll have to think about why he said that.
I don't know if he is making the entertainment pitch. My perspective would be he might say that he wants to make rugby more entertaining, but what he wants to do is and I don't begrudge this, he wants his team to compete.
Yes. I'm absolutely certain you're right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If I'm going to take him at his word, what would be the reality? And the reality is, I think the World Cup was some of the greatest rugby that we've ever seen.
Mm. Don't disagree.
And it was all based on the physicality of the scrum. Now, even a layman who's never watched rugby before in their lives can watch that and think, my word, that is incredible. Now, it's not incredible all the time. And the lower down the pyramid you go, from World Cup to Premiership to, you know, probably it does get worse. But it's essential. It's absolutely essential to the character of the game. That's what makes it unique. Otherwise, you know, what have you got? The scrum is the iconic part of the entire sport. So I disagree with him. In fact, I strongly disagree with him.
He's not... So Gatland's two were the mark and reduced subs.
I think he said mark reduced subs. I think he made reference about too many scrums taking too long. That was all tied in with the replacement chat where he was basically saying you need to get more fatigue in the players.
Yeah.
When Gatland did well with Wales, it was always they were so fit that they did really well in the last 20 minutes of games.
Yeah, and high intensity.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say, isn't it? But if you think about the head injuries too, one of the reasons you get so many head injuries is because of multiple sustained subconcussive hits.
Well, Ross Tucker, actually, when he was doing work for World Rugby, one of the things that popped into my mind was that he actually said, if you want to follow the data and you want to put player welfare as your most important thing, which is what they tell us is, he said the consequence of that is you should have more replacements. Because
I agree with him.
But, well, so I've heard him talk about it, saying... You still need to do more work because you don't have conclusive data on what is the prevailing mechanism of injury.
Correct.
Is it fatigue and therefore people getting more injured because they're fatigued? Or is it you having explosive players coming off the bench who are fresh against more fatigued players? Which has the greater impact? Because if you change it and you have fewer subs, you can make it worse or you can make it better. Yeah, if you're doing it from
my question to you,
that's fair.
To you both is, would you A, like to be fatigued getting tackled by super athletes, or would you B, like to be fresh getting tackled by super athletes who are also fresh?
It depends. Are those super athletes the equivalent to me? As in, are they fatigued to the same degree as me or not? Well, because if they're fatigued to the same degree as me, I would want to be fatigued to the same degree as the people I'm having to tackle.
I don't know. Okay. Does how knackered you are matter how much Oxenche hurts you when you get smashed by it?
Well, allegedly it does. And the reason I say this is because, if I remember correctly, there was GPS evidence about rugby players. I think this is in sevens, actually. And they claim, when they first started with the GPS and all and monitoring, that they could predict injuries based on heart rate and fatigue, and X amount of injuries happened. This might be old science, it might be absolute nonsense now, I don't know. So if you do know the answer to this, let me know. And as they fatigue through heart rate and whatnot, that's when all the injuries started to happen. So I imagine if you're slightly fatigued and you're not going into Oxenche with quite the ferocity you need to, he might take advantage of that.
But if he's also fatigued and you're both going in a little bit less, maybe you are, because you're both 10% off.
But then at that point, isn't the most important of all the skill sets just body mass? Like, if I'm fatigued and Will Skelton's fatigued, he's got a massive advantage anyway. But body mass tends to then be a much bigger issue.
Yes, if you want go forward.
Yes, go forward in particular.
Yeah, but body mass becomes another problem, because if you're 150 kg or whatever Will Skelton it currently is,
and you have to carry it around for 80 minutes rather than 50 minutes.
Yeah. Mm. He might be less effective.
Yeah, correct.
There are no solutions. There are only trade-offs. It's a horrendously dangerous game.
Completely agree.
Warren Gatland's suggestion of getting rid of the mark, I think, is a poor one, because the threat of someone catching it and being able to compose themselves and kick to exit without anyone interfering is the reason why teams don't kick more further up the field. I think if you took away the mark, you'd actually get more kicking, less.
I think you would get more kicking.
I don't actually think that's a bad thing, because we've seen kicking really in stitch teams.
Yeah, what you mean, I think what Warren Gatland doesn't like about it is the game kind of just stops at that point.
Yeah, so imagine the threat of deep kicking. Do you then drop an extra player maybe to deal with that deep kick? because it's now so dangerous. You might want someone.
No, I think you would kick to compete. Well, you might. Yeah. You might chuck up a box kick when you're on the 22.
Yeah. You'd see more.
I'm all for it.
I think you would see a little bit more of that. I think they have already, because obviously the 50-22 is intended to. The incentive to kick is higher, therefore you drop more players into the deep, which creates space elsewhere. It's incentivizing kicking with the intention of it should get less kicking overall.
Yeah, the more dangerous the kick, the more space. I mean, let's take this to the nth degree. Imagine if there's some sort of law which is if you kick from the halfway and the ball bounces over the 22, not goes dead, bounces, scrum there. How many players would you drop?
Yeah.
You know, you all of a sudden you've got loads of space.
Yeah.
So the more dangerous kicking is, the more space you get. It's one of those things which simpletons don't really understand, but it needs to happen.
Or you could do it like it's not dodgeball. That's the opposite of dodgeball. But there was a game that you used to play where if you catch the ball, when someone throws it at you, you catch them there.
Yeah, dodgeball is that, isn't
well,
it?
Is that, maybe that or is dodgeball.
There is
then.
Certainly a variant.
If you hit them, they're out. And if you catch
you're out.
Maybe do that with rugby. If you kick the ball and someone catches it unopposed and catches it cleanly, you have to leave the pitch.
5 minutes, gone.
Well, the mark, this is the second iteration of the mark. Because the mark used to be universal, didn't it?
Did it?
You could mark anywhere on the pitch.
Don't remember.
No, surely not.
Yeah, this is going back a long time.
That's what they do in Aussie rules.
I'm sure the mark was...
Wow.
You could mark anywhere.
Mm, perhaps, yeah.
But yeah.
I know you used to... No, I think you may well be confusing two things. You used to be able to kick to touch from anywhere.
Yeah, I remember when that changed, it blew my mind.
Oh, maybe it is that.
Yeah, you could.
You could kick that. Straight out from anywhere,
straight
couldn't
out
you?
From anywhere, yeah.
22. Yeah.
It was like when that was the equivalent of... And you can't imagine it now, but I remember watching games where you were allowed to back pass and the goalkeeper could pick it up in football.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. That.
And defend when the team was time wasting, they would just kick the ball back and forth.
Yeah.
Defender to goalie.
Oh, good old days.
Endlessly.
Shall we talk about some games?
Is there any other names? Adam Radwan, I was going to say.
Oh, sorry.
I'd like to see him in the squad. He's playing in a terrible team.
Before he's going to ever have a shot.
He needs to be given... No, that shouldn't be the...
Shouldn't be, but it's reality.
I don't want it to be.
It is when Newcastle are doing what they're doing, unfortunately.
I had thought that Zach Mercer would be one that I would... And I still think I want him in, because I think he's a proper talent, but he just hasn't really demonstrated it in a Gloucester team that has not played badly. That might not be a bad place to stay with. Big game. The big game at Twickenham.
Yeah.
I do. It's big game 15 now. I do miss big game 8.
Yeah.
Big game 8 was the pinnacle.
That was the pinnacle.
Hang on. Have I got the right game? No, I haven't. There we go. I have got the right game now. Good old Ultimate Rugby. Yeah. So not only a big game for the men's team, but also a record for the ladies team. Hear about this?
What do you mean a record?
A record attendance, 16,000. I mean, obviously, you don't believe a word of it. It's all complete lies.
16,000.
16,000 came exclusively to watch ladies.
Well, they left after full time and then didn't watch Queens v Gloucester.
Do you know...
That's a bit annoying for Twickenham.
The only people who lose out with this behaviour of publicising numbers which are not real are the women. And it's a shame that they continue to do this. But yeah, 16,000, we should all celebrate it. I mean, it just begs the question, how many people would have been there if it wasn't for the men's teams playing? 500?
Well, how many people were there full stop?
70-something thousand.
So right. 70,000, yeah, it was a big turnout for the Quins-Gloucester game.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, so what you can say is, isn't it fantastic that 16,000 people saw some or all of a women's premiership game? Great. But but that is conflating slightly that it's not true to say 16,000 people went... to watch and paid
to watch. It's just the lying but, with hey, them. It's just not genuine, is it?
If they're watching it and they enjoyed it, maybe they'll go back for more.
I hope so. I hope they do. I hope it's a compelling prop. I hope it's a compelling prop.
And hey, 70,000 people to a club game. That's pretty cool.
Mm.
Yeah, it is. And
some good numbers this week as well. You know, Welford Road.
Bearing in mind at that same stadium, the Premiership final had to give tickets away. What was it £2.50? Thousands of tickets were given away for £2 or free.
I mean, they were giving... tickets away to the NHS for, I think, nothing, was it not?
Yeah, I think it was like, free.
It might
be
a booking fee.
Yeah, an admin fee.
It was something ridiculous. And I remember, I mean, ex-Premiership director of comms, one of the most one of the most amazing additions by subtraction that rugby's ever actually experienced when he left, was saying what a great result it was to be giving, to be helping out our heroes. With respect, it's not about that, is it? It should just be about filling the stadium with people that love rugby.
Mm.
So anyway, this was a great event, and I've said many, many derogatory things about Premiership Rugby in the past, but this week I thought Premiership Rugby was excellent, and this event did look like it was handled brilliantly. Twickenham looked amazing, looked absolutely amazing. It's reminiscent of something in the top 14, frankly.
Mm. Or an international game. I loved seeing Twickenham packed out like this.
Mm. What do you say about the rugby, though?
But that is interesting. Just on that, because sort of dovetailing, mentioning the Premiership final from last year, which was relatively poorly attended, and the excitement for that final occasion for neutrals just isn't there in a way that the Pilkington Cup and the Premiership final was before. In fact, when I've worked on the Premiership final before, I've mentioned this on the podcast a bunch of times, the fact you would see shirts from all of the Premiership clubs. It was like it was a whole day out. That has gone. Unfortunately, that has gone. It would be great to capture that back again. But what I was going to say is, did you notice how Premiership Rugby were talking about taking the Premiership around the country?
Yes, I heard this.
And on the face of it, you kind of go, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Real, like a no-brainer. You've got great stadiums all around England. You can promote the sport in different areas. But the cynical part of me thought, this is because you couldn't sell tickets for Twickenham.
And
you
the
can pick
question,
a smaller stadium.
Would it be worth it? Because, well, rugby owns Twickenham, doesn't it? And if it wants to play somewhere else, it's got to hire that stadium. So would that be worth it? Maybe not. But St James's Park would be cool. Old Trafford would not be cool. But maybe City would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm up for it. I'm massively up for it. I mean, moving anything away from Twickenham is good in my mind, to a degree. Twickenham's not a bad stadium. But what do we say about the rugby then?
Well, Gloucester made it look respectable in the last 10 minutes with the two tries. And to get, we got two bonus points, didn't they? Besides that, it wasn't really respectable. It was a bit of a beatdown, wasn't it?
Yeah, the only thing I can think about for Gloucester at the moment is that every team in the Premiership seems to be top one or two at something, whatever that may be, whether it be scrummaging or your style of play or your offloading game. Quins are phenomenally good at cohesive ball and hand play.
Oh, yeah.
They're just really good at it. Them and Northampton are one and two.
Offloading, reading the gaps, attacking the lines, yeah.
Like Northampton say, every gap you attack could well be your next try.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those are one and two. What are Gloucester good at? Because they're not bad at anything, but they're just not good at anything either. And this is a problem. They don't have that identity.
Their defence this week, particularly in the first half, some of it was really, really weak. Like when Marcus Smith, who you know is going to dummy goose step, try and accelerate through the gap, and there was one, which try was it? It might have been one of the Nick David tries, where he was against Chris Harris, international outside centre, Lyon, and I think it was Rua and Ackerman inside him. And between the two of them, kind of Harris pushes out too early, Ackerman can't get across, and Marcus Smith does exactly what you know Marcus Smith is going to do, and finds the gap and offloads, and it's try time. And I guess my point is their defence at times this week was just plain bad.
And their defence has, over the last couple of years, been pretty good.
Mm.
So Don Waldock was in charge of it. Is he still there?
I think he is. Yeah.
If not. And he was doing a really good job. And you don't necessarily assume that associate Don Waldock with great defence. He's doing a really good job. But I think, like many coaches, like almost like Pat Lam syndrome, the thing which made you good can erode quickly in rugby, because people watch what you do and they overcome it, and you've got to continuously evolve. So Gloucester were based on hard work, defence, and a driving
maul. Yeah, very good set piece.
We saw we saw one of their tries. George McGuigan's try was off a good bit of organised.
Yeah,
it was.
Their first try was world class. So Ackerman chips in midfield.
That was unusual.
His little grubber through to to Lewis Rees Sammet.
It might have been a chip or it was a kick.
It was a kick.
And like,
a crossfield kick pass.
That's amazing.
If Finn Russell did that, or Bowden Barrett did that, I was just confused when he did that.
He was on Zammet's shoulder to take the pass.
He did, yeah.
And, yeah.
So the problem with that try is I watched it, I thought, that's amazing, but there's no way they can do it again.
So, but that was also the one where there was two potential forward passes.
Yeah.
Forward pass from the, was it the nine going back to recover the ball?
See, yeah, this is one of those, I would reflect on this game if I were a Gloucester fan, as you would have some justification for feeling like there was just something out there in the ether that's just working against you.
I agree.
Because there were some questionable decisions which could well have gone the other way.
Yeah, they could have, but Gloucester are a bunch of losers at the moment. And I mean that in terms of when you're not winning and you don't have that habit of winning, well, what's the alternative?
That's eight straight Premiership defeats. Mm. They won their first two, they've lost eight.
I think it might be the worst run in Premiership history for them.
I think it may well be.
And they're on minus 100 points difference as well.
They're not far off.
Yeah.
They got two bonus points from this game. So.
This is not a bad Premiership rugby team. That's what you're
going to say. Exactly.
Not bad. Just not winning.
And equally, that... was it Nick David? Try-saving tackle on Thorley.
Yes.
Unreal.
Nick David trips him and then Esther Hazen finishes it off. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's what it takes. I tell you another moment of this game I loved, and it was so... I don't know where I stand with this guy, because I love how brave he is, but I also appreciate that he can get overawed at times. Carreras absolutely smashes Esther Hazen. And I've seen him absolutely... So when it's on the line and there's a big body in the way, he's not afraid of absolutely smashing someone. But then I think after that, he wilts. So he's got one big hit in him and they break him. And he's like, oh, I can't do this anymore.
He's not a huge boy as well. I'm just going to look up his weight. What do you reckon?
I'd say 90.
Didn't he absolutely smoke someone in the Wales game as well in the quarterfinal of the World Cup?
It sounds like him. Remember. George North or someone.
Yeah.
He is capable of absolutely annihilating people. But then that's in the process, he annihilates himself.
Yeah, so
I think it might have been in the England game. He absolutely smashed someone. But anyway,
he's listed in two places: one at 87 kg,
that sounds
and one,
about right.
One at 82. He's probably
82.
He can't be 82. He's 5'11", but either even if he's the 87, the upper end of that scale, he's giving away
he's a big footballer.
He's giving away 25 kilos to Esther Hazen.
Yeah. Well, he did it. It was a cracking tackle, to be fair. I tell you, the other guy at Quinns I'm really sort of like is Finn Baxter. He seems to be decent. Mm. Keeps on showing up, keeps on putting in reasonable performances.
The one who needs to be mentioned, bearing in mind I've already mentioned Zach Mercer, and we've been talking about players that might get another crack for England, is Alex Dombrad does look very, very good when he plays for Quinns.
Yes, he does.
He had an extended run with England and didn't really take his chance.
It was a weird one as well, because he was Borthwick's guy. He was starting number eight in the Six Nations, and then done.
Yep.
Didn't make it.
Nobody has looked good in the England shirt until the South Africa game.
Which is fair,
Ben Earl through the whole World Cup, actually.
Yeah, Ben Earl was good. George Ford in the Argentina game, because it was all about George Ford in the Argentina game. But yeah, you're right. Almost no one, like, the whole England team looked bad until that South Africa game.
Yeah. Mm. So, Harlequins, let's just talk about them quickly. Phenomenally dangerous team. They're just phenomenally dangerous.
Yeah.
I don't even know what the upper end is for this team, because they're missing players. They're missing their two better wingers, in my mind, although Nick David's superb. So how Nick David, Tyrone Green, Caden Murley and Louis Leiner fit into three positions, I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
But and Oscar Beard, throw him in as well, because I think he...
And Luke Northmore, when he comes back fit. Because he can play 13 or wing
really
as well.
Really good player. And, you know, I thought they'd miss Marchant. They've not missed Marchant one bit yet.
Yeah, well, can we... And looking at... Talking about that with Quinns, I think their unpredictability, the fact they can turn up and be easily the best team in the league, but they can also have an off day and get pumped, means that this year, more than most years, because there's fewer games and because there's more teams at a similar level, they could miss out on top four even. I'm just looking... Look at that top six as we turn.
Yeah. I'm looking at the Ultimate Rugby top six. So I've got Northampton Saints, Exeter Chiefs, Sale Sharks, Bath, Saracens, Harlequins.
All separated by 3 points.
And then
wow,
Tigers, who are 6 points off, but are very, very dangerous.
Yeah,
Leicester Tigers.
Well. Yeah, I think the only team that I'm going and not making top four is Bristol, Gloucester, Newcastle.
Yeah.
Agreed with that.
Leicester upwards, it could be any of them.
It is kind of the point that you made a little while ago, JB, that apart from the bottom three, they're all good. And it really is hard to pick.
That Exeter and Sale points difference, bearing in mind they're only 1 point apart in the league and they've got the same number of wins and defeats. Exeter plus 103, Sale minus 18.
Yeah.
Bonkers, isn't it?
Sale being one of only three teams, they're in third and they're one of only three teams with negative points difference.
Well, that's because of two massive losses, isn't it?
It's because they've scored the second fewest points in the league, only fewer than... only more than Newcastle Falcons. So they're not scoring many points, which means they're winning all the games by narrow margins when they're winning. And then they've been hammered twice, which means that they're on negative point difference.
Well, on Sale, a 14-point lead they threw.
Lead, yeah, with 20 minutes to go or so, something like that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just on an update from Leinster at the RDS.
Uh-oh.
Ulster were 12-0 up. Mm-hmm. Leinster 14-12. But now Nick Timoney's just scored and John Cooney has converted. So Timoney scored two tries and they're 19-14 up at half time.
Come on, Ulster. Big win.
Worth keeping an eye on that one. Mm. Oh, did you see Connacht's got a win against Munster as well?
Very fair nice. Play.
That was
weakened squad for Munster by any chance?
Earlier today. Just checking that. Well, I mean, Munster have got loads of injuries at the minute.
Couldn't tell him. Don't know.
No, it's not that different from the team that played against Leinster, to be honest.
The 9-3.
It's almost exactly the same team, but they do have a lot of players out. So, but that's a good win
fair
for
play.
Connacht.
Yeah, fair play, Connacht.
Yeah, so anyone watch Sale Northampton?
Yes, so most of it, I think. I was very impressed by the way that Northampton ground out the win. Because that one thing you will always say about this incarnation of the Sale team, they are physical and hard up front. Northampton, that's not always how I would describe them.
No.
But it was the pressure from Northampton matching Sale to get them ahead after coming back from 14 points down and then to keep them ahead for the last 5 minutes when Sale were banging on the door.
So I think there are two statement wins for Northampton this year.
Mm-hmm.
One would be Sale, for exactly the reasons that you say, and also the fact that Sale are pretty much a French team in the Premiership, the way that I look them. That's just how they are.
As big a pack as they can possibly get.
And the other one, which was a lucky win, was definitely a lucky win, was against Toulon. But that just set the table for them, saying, yeah, we can win against anyone, really.
Mm.
I mean, the size doesn't matter. We're very confident in what we do. And this is also in the depths of winter. So you'd have thought that the matchup that Northampton would hate the most would be Sale right now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So to do this, I think it's one hell of a result for Northampton. Where they can, they are favourites for me to win the league at the moment.
Maybe not favourites, but they're a hell of a team, and it really is this to do exactly what you just said, to beat Sale in these conditions, with Sale winning, by grinding out, by the physicality, was very, very impressive.
Yeah. So I think the best team in the Premiership, if they just to play tomorrow with your best 15, the best team in the Premiership is probably Leicester Tigers. But I think the most likely to win the Premiership, as things stand, or in the best position with how they're playing, is Northampton Saints.
Well, Tigers, they have got an uphill battle just to get into the top four.
But they're playing lots of people above them as well.
So they've got to play everyone apart from
Saracens
Bath again. So they've got to play because we are just over. We're one game after halfway.
Yep.
So other than Bath, they've got to play every single team once. So they're going to guarantee three wins against Bristol, Gloucester, and Newcastle Falcons, and then they're going to have six pointers in football parlance. So they beat everyone else above them.
Well, I think they smashed up Saracens if they have their full team available to them. They are rounding into a really nice team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their next games are Saracens at home, Quinn's away.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they beat Quinn's away.
Big two games for them.
It is big two. And they are in sixth and fifth place. So they can potentially leapfrog one or both of those teams if they win those two with 5 points.
Yeah, and everybody else is going to be playing each other. There's only 10 teams.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone has to play every team apart from one again.
It's crazy. So I do think a full Leicester Tigers team, if I run on all cylinders, they've just got the size and the aggression. They can batter Saracens, absolutely batter them because of how it matches up. I don't know they can beat Harlequins, though.
Mm. Harlequins who got battered by Saracens.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say Bath would be a nasty matchup for them, but they've just absolutely leathered Bath.
But that was a second-string Bath team. Yeah.
Now, this is causing some controversy in this game. What do you think of the Bath team selection?
I don't care.
Why? I care.
Well, because... Hold on a minute. Okay. So what's the controversy? Or controversy, however you're meant to say that word. Biopic and biopic. What's the right way around?
Oh, it's definitely biopic.
Biopic.
Is it?
I don't know.
You got me thinking, though. Yeah. So the controversy is that Bath basically rolled over and gave Leicester the game by not picking their best team. And I am absolutely in agreement with that.
Well, so what's the alternative?
Pick your best team.
But there's a limit to the number of games in which they can play players.
And what is this limit?
Well,
according to who?
Well, so there's international players, they've particularly England players anyway, they've signed up to an agreement that there's certain games that they can play. Also,
Finn Russell's got a limit on his games
Finn
as well.
Finn Russell has a limit on his games. There's also the undeniable fact that between the end of the World Cup, when all the squads were back to normal, and the Six Nations, there is no rest week.
Okay, so...
So I don't think it's unreasonable that there would be an element of rest or rotation with some players.
Rotation is one thing.
At some point, yes.
I don't have a problem with rotation at all.
Well, the reason you have a squad is...
Rotation. Not for wholesale changes. I don't think that's right. So, if we look at the team that Bath put out against Harlequins, where they did very, very well, there's a load of... Alfie Barbary, Alfie Barbary, Ben Spencer, Finn Russell, Will Muir, Ollie Lawrence and Joe Cockensinger not being present. That is a big deal. By anyone's stretch, that is a big deal. Missing your 8, your 9, your 10. Now, if the problem you have with this...
I'll just jump in and say the alternative is that you make a few changes in one and you make a few changes in another and you might end up losing both games.
You might do. But here's the other thing. And we saw this with Leicester a few years ago. You can get, and Saracens do it quite well, to be fair to them. You can make changes to your first 15, and say if you take out Ben Spencer and put in Louis Schroeder or whoever whoever started, he might be able to do a really good job surrounded by good players that can play a couple of percentage better. And I think that's the same for most players. But when you put all of your backups in at the same time, that's a real problem to me.
I would suggest that there's a comparative level of changes between the Bath team this week from last week and the Saracens team this week from last week.
Yeah,
it's just that Saracens were playing Newcastle this week and Saracens have a deeper squad than Bath.
I think what you say is probably true, but I think the fly in the ointment for that is Newcastle are legitimately rubbish. So you are right in saying, can you criticise Bath without criticising Saracens? Well, Bath are going to one of their biggest rivals, and they know they're going to get a good hiding. Saracens don't know that, actually. Saracens are like, well, it is Newcastle, and we're at home. It's not a massive rivalry, and they're rubbish. Like, you combine all those things, I think it's acceptable for Saracens to do what they did, because, well, they won. Yeah, they won, and that's all that matters, really. They won.
Well, so I'd say there is something that matters more than winning this one game. Top four. So if the trade-off, because I think the trade-off is, do we know we're going to win this but have a much better chance of winning the games around it? Sorry, know we're going to lose this but have a much better chance of winning the games around it, or do we risk losing all the games around it, including this one, by changing two or three players every time? And I just think, I've seen people online saying there should be rules against this, like rules against wholesale changes, that kind of thing. I think it should be entirely the gift of the director of rugby to do whatever he wants to give him, because his job is get top four, win the premiership.
Yeah.
Whatever you believe gives the best opportunity to get top four to win the premiership.
Right, so
that's
it. So the question you're asking really is, I think I do agree with you that it should come down to the DOR. I think you're probably right. But the question is, do you compromise the product or do you compromise the end result in the league.
No. Well, here's the product element that I'll jump in and suggest. Again, I think it probably does come down to points, ultimately, and that's the decision that was made. Equally, if you were thinking from a product point of view, the amount of cash that people have to pay for a ticket at the Rec, and knowing that the next game, before they go back into Europe, when they've got a home game against Racing and they've got an away game against Toulouse, and they have a genuinely good chance of progressing if they win, especially that first game against Racing. But the next game is Gloucester at home. A massive...
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
...game for their home fans. Mm. The thing that I didn't like about the changes for Bath this week is that historically, and when I first got into rugby, Leicester v Bath was the two big English powerhouses.
Yeah,
and it is a shame to see it. I agree with you, but Bath v Gloucester at home, and I think Leicester stacked their team this week because they were at home. And
they did stack their team,
and that is what people tend to do when there's decisions to make.
And this year,
they stack the teams at home.
We flagged this earlier in the year because of the weakened overall squads.
Yeah.
You are going to get. And the lower salary cap, which contributes to it, you're going to get teams who will put a very strong team out at home and a weak team out.
And that's what France
travelling away.
That's what they've been doing in France for many years.
Yeah.
Although that didn't stop. Racing 92 sent their very best. They sent Sia Khaleesi. They sent Henry Arundel to the mighty Bayonne and got beaten.
Yeah.
Bayonne were 20-3 down, and a try and. 21 points, 3 tries, but the 14 points scored in the last 7 minutes. And two converted tries by Bayonne.
That is very impressive.
Yeah. Very impressive.
Whereas my beloved Bordeaux, they did send a second string team to Clermont, rested a lot of players, and won.
They did. What a game that looked like.
Fantastic.
Damien Penaud against his old team. He wasn't playing.
He wasn't playing. Penaud was one of the rested, loads of rested players. But they scored 2 tries in the last 10 minutes to win in a 75-point cracker.
So can I just make one more point about Bath? Mm. Throw us out there and let's see what you think. So I think one of the reasons I'm so upset about this from Bath is because I don't think Bath's recent success is necessarily set in stone. I think they're still a fragile team.
I completely agree with that.
So because they're fragile and because they're still building this mentality of winning, I don't think you can throw away any games. I think they should have gone out to win this. And if it's a mixed squad, that's what they should have done. You know, they started a hooker on debut. The whole thing was just a bit of a mess. And despite that, they did okay. But actually, do you know what? If you watched them and you saw how they set up their mauls, that's always a really good indication of where a team is at. They couldn't set a maul up. Like, the maul was like fat at the front and not very deep. I think, bloody hell, that is exactly not what you want. This is the opposite to good mauling.
And they did struggle. I don't know what good mauling looks like, but I know they struggled defending mauls as well. I know what bad maul defence looks like because you're conceding tries through it.
And even worse for me, I mentioned this at the top of the show, but even worse for me was the performance of some of the senior lads. Will Stewart was awful. I mean, absolutely awful. You want lads who, when you put them in a bad team, they raise everyone else.
They're the leaders,
them.
Yeah.
In the same way that when you put your replacements into the first team, they come up to standard or everyone lifts them up. He was dreadful. I think it's really damaged his England prospects, that. I really do.
So it is a tough shift going away to a stacked Leicester team. But
that's his job, isn't it?
It is.
He's going to be the best in the country.
But in his England prospects, who goes in? Like, if Will Stewart's not there?
Joe Hayes.
Joe Hayes, maybe. He had a good game this week, but I'm not sure he's there.
No. I'll tell you who I like. Let's just talk about players that I do like. I've never seen this boy play. Don't know who he is. I thought thin Theobald Thomas was an absolute dynamo when he came on.
He was handy. Yeah, yeah.
He got over the ball, stole it, yep. made some good tackles. Age 20, 105 kilograms, 5'10". Second coming of Harry Thacker, maybe.
Maybe.
Just on this game...
They've got some hooker options.
Yeah, they've
got some hooker options. And do you know what? They've got some back row options. Because when you bring off the bench Kyle Hatherall and Ollie Cracknell, just to bang people,
yeah,
it's terrifying. There is a bloody good squad, Leicester now.
It is.
I do like the second row partnership. The first time those two have ever played together in the second row.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah.
George Martin and Ollie Chessum.
So did you see Ollie Chessum's interview at the end?
Unfortunately, so it happened on TNT Sport. I did not watch any of the post-game stuff, so I did not see it. And I think that's probably the majority of people. I imagine that the viewing dips right off.
Yeah.
So I'm imagining that what you're about to describe that happened is something that TNT Sport couldn't wait to put out on their social media channels to share, because it highlights the great personality and a great real human moment from one of the stars of the game. But funnily enough, TNT Sport have not put it on their Twitter account.
Yeah. So Ollie Chessum, during his interview with, I think it was Bayford,
Craig Doyle.
Craig Doyle, yeah.
It was Craig Doyle, yes.
Decided to neck a pint, which was absolutely superb. Well, I say superb. I was thinking, what are you doing? Like, the media men and women at Tigers must have been pulling their hair out.
Oh, no, it was.
Let alone the alcohol sponsors.
Well, Bayfield was there, wasn't he? Because Bayfield was...
Reporter, yeah.
But I thought, this is one of those things which hopefully will slide underneath the radar. But what I also thought is, I wish I'd caught that on my phone and posted it off the Egg Chaser's Twitter account, which nobody knows the password to at the moment. just a bit of fishing to see what the reaction would be. This is a disgrace. All the rest of it. It was a nice moment. I don't know what it says about the professionalism of the sport, but it was a nice moment. It's intrinsically linked to rugby, isn't it?
And by the way, he only did it because he was encouraged to do it. It was
he was encouraged
that's okay. No, it was fair play. And I thought, nice job, Craig Doyle. He went, thanks for coming in. You better see that off.
What? No, and he went,
I'll see it off, and knocked it back with his left hand. Fair play. And
Craig Doyle was saying even funnier, which I really, really liked. He turned around to Chessum and said, can you hold the mic with the other hand, please? Because, of course, then he'd be done.
Buffalo.
It's Buffalo indeed. So, yeah, great scenes. Loved it.
So, before, I didn't actually see that, but I did watch the post-match with Jasper Visa, where one of his lines was, getting smashed is humble. Oh, it keeps you humble. And Craig Doyle said, I find getting smashed, it's something like, I think, getting smashed humbling as well, but it's a different kind of getting smashed. It was a line.
What type of getting smashed is he referring to?
I was like, oh, interesting.
Okay.
I love Craig Doyle.
I know, he's great.
He was really good.
I've been on European weekends with Doyle, and I cannot confirm or deny what type of getting smashed he's referring to.
I would love to go on a weekend with Doyle.
Absolutely.
Dallaglio is the one you need to watch out for. In fact, Doyle and Dallaglio as a twosome.
I don't have that kind of money.
they're the dangerous ones.
I do not doubt it for a second.
And I will just say, Austin Healey's the one that you don't have to worry about the money, because he goes to the bar and usually buys a bottle of something and then just pours it down people's throats.
I tell you what, I do remember this though. I won't tell you which BT stores were involved in this, but we were out in Philadelphia.
Mm.
They were playing Gin Face, and I could not count the amount of shots which were on the table. I don't know who funded that. Was it
Gin Face? Explanation?
Do you know Gin Face?
Do I know it by another name?
Nope.
The name is pretty self-explanatory.
No, right, so Gin Face, right? Yeah. It is lots of shots of water, but equally lots of shots of gin.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And you take one, and you've got to guess, was it a gin? Or was it a water? Obviously, you don't have to guess it as the drinker.
Yeah, yeah.
But the person observing the drinking.
I think that one was gin.
If they guess correctly, you go again.
Yeah.
Very good. Well done, Tigers.
I didn't know it was exclusively with gin.
Because gin's really clear.
Yeah, so is vodka.
Yeah.
Gin's maybe clearer. So I hear.
Maybe, okay. Cool.
I don't know.
And gin, I find gin more disgusting as well.
More disgusting, true. Yeah.
How hard can it be? It's a dark bar.
Yes.
I'm sure vodka will work fine. By all means, try vodka.
Baileys.
Baileys and pond water. Which one was it? And the last game we're going to talk about, I think, because unless you want to say something about Saracens, I don't.
No, didn't really see anything.
Well, Saracens, great win. This is actually an important game. Bristol Bears Exeter.
And an important win for an important last minute Vermeulen try to mean that Bristol got nothing. It was a 3-point game with 5 minutes to go. And Bristol walk away at home with nothing against the kids.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, the talking point from this one is Emmanuel Feo-Wabosso.
Yes.
Who I've seen a few times, and until today I was not impressed with. Today.
Oh, I came back on the podcast and raved about him after a Premiership Cup game last season, him and Tom Wyatt.
He scored a cracking try earlier in the season in one game and then got injured shortly after it. Yeah.
Very steppy.
I like him.
And strong as well.
I need to see more, though. Like, most Premiership wingers can carry the ball nicely. He does carry the ball very nicely. Mm. Yeah. But is everything else there? And this is what you've got to remember about wingers. If you can't chase a ball, if you can't chase a kick, you're not a winger. Anyone can carry a ball. Not anyone.
Which is actually where, in terms of international... I want express pace in the England team which is why I still want to persevere. I still want Radwan to be involved. I want Murley around the place, but when I look at the other stuff to do with being a winger, I look at Tom Roebuck and think he could transition to international rugby.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Completely agree.
England or Scotland.
He's great. Chasing kicks, he's absolutely brilliant.
Mm. Yeah, and that's so important. People don't realise how important that is. It's so important.
When Andy Goode apparently said the quote-unquote training ground bust-up between Farrell and Arundel, all that was actually happening, Arundel was not chasing kicks.
Unacceptable. Send him home.
And he got told off for it.
Although, by the captain. You see the rugby pass clip of Dave Atwood this week explaining why Owen Farrell hates him?
No.
Oh,
go on.
So, long story short, Dave Atwood was asked on a podcast, who do you struggle with? And he goes, on the field, Owen Farrell. And he was at pains to say Owen Farrell's a great bloke off the field, this, that and the other. And then proceeded to tell a story where Owen Farrell was clearly not a great bloke. But apparently, Atwood said something along the lines of, rugby league is a sport played by peasants. Now, that's not the greatest phrasing.
when his whole family is rugby league royalty.
That might rub up.
just laugh, Owen. Just laugh. You're the England captain. Your dad is lying.
Rugby
coach.
League is a game played by peasants.
I mean,
if he'd said it was a salt of the earth working class sport, that would have said exactly the same thrust of the point, but framed it in a very, very different way.
Russell conjugation of peasants.
The joke should purely be on Dave Atwood, who knows nothing about rugby league. Because anyone who even comes close to rugby league will say it is a game played by the hardest men ever to walk the planet, right? The joke is on Dave Atwood, but apparently Owen Farrell took it so badly he tried to hit him with a toilet door.
So was there any indication of what Ben Spencer was joking about then?
Oh, Ben Spencer was banished a long time ago.
Was it pies? Yeah, was he joking? Did he make a joke about pies?
No, Ben Spencer looked at him wrong. Just looked at him wrong and gone. So Owen Farrell, it seems Dave Atwoods is confirming all my biases about Owen Farrell. Let's go back to Exeter. This is important because they don't win away, or they've won very infrequently away. I think you're right on Greg Fissell, Tim. He looks like a real, real player.
I do not want him anywhere near the England squad yet. Give him a good couple of years playing rugby.
Throw him in. Get the kids in.
He's definitely ready. He looks great. Really like him. And I think, was this Ollie DeVos' first game back?
He played last week.
First start.
Maybe. He came off, but yeah, he has played. This was not his first game. But it's good to see Devoto back.
Yeah, this is a great win for Exeter because they don't win often away. It is a very worrying game for Bristol Bears. Bristol Bears must be thinking about replacing Pat Lam. They just deserve better. That's the only thing I can think of.
I'll say one thing. I don't like players that qualify on residency and aren't actually of that nationality.
However,
when did Jack Vermeulen get to England? Because we do not have many great sixes, and got that he came off the bench and was just a weapon.
He is a weapon, isn't he?
Well, he is one of the two from the pretty much from the championship winning team that they've retained. Him and Henry Slade are like the two kind of big
Jack
names.
Vermeulen?
Yeah,
was he?
Yeah,
we did this
last week.
Last week or two weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant the championship when they got promoted.
No, sorry.
The double winning.
Yeah, three years ago. Like, yes.
Are you sure about this? Because I don't want to call you out.
He would have been about 14 maybe when they got promoted from the championship.
So he's 28, and he got to Exeter in 2019.
Originally packed down next to Rob Baxter.
Hmm.
He got to Exeter in 2019, so he will not.
This year? 5 years?
2024. He'll qualify. He'll qualify in the summer.
Just think, with his age, there'd be no point in doing this. Because if it's 2 years from a World Cup, you go, okay, this guy's a player. God. No, I'm just going to.
He'd only be 31 years old.
Do you know, I'm just going to interrupt myself and go in a different 32. Way. Like, what on earth are we talking about? Because the main thing here is, look at the players South Africa don't need.
That's
the thing which I think, like...
That's the thing.
Is it any wonder that it's the most arrogant rugby team in the world? And that's not a criticism either. They absolutely deserve it. Like, these are the guys they don't need.
Yeah. Like, another one, very similar to Vermaelen in Liebenberg.
Yeah.
He's one of the most important players for this Leicester Tigers team.
Not interested in just a guy.
Not this week, but under normal circumstances, he's captained Leicester Tigers.
There are legitimately players up and down the league who are South African, who are the most important players for their club, and South Africa don't even know their names.
Stephen Levis.
Well, Tyrone Green as well.
All of Sale Sharks. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just nuts.
It is insane.
I'm not even sure what's in. I'm not sure what is in the top 14, but I'm sure there's one or two handy ones in there. Which
Bernard Jansie van Rensburg.
Yeah, Birger Odendaal.
England crying out for a 12. He would be snapped up in their squad straight away.
Yeah.
Oh, the Noah Heward try was very nice.
Yeah, that was.
Oh, actually, it was not just a bit nice. It was really nice.
Yeah.
Because there's two little tip passes, one from Vakatawa and then one from van Rensburg. I actually think.
Yeah. I think you're right, to get it out to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lovely finish.
Yeah.
Just on that, and I forget which journalist made this observation, but it's one that we've made many times before, but I just mentioned the issue England have at 12, and I mentioned Bernard Jansie van Rensburg. Of the 10 sides that were playing this weekend, how many of them were English?
Of the
10 Premiership sides that were playing with a 12 on their back, Exeter had Ollie Devoto.
Bedloe.
Bristol had Bernard Jansie van Rensburg. You had Ollie Hartley was English.
Yeah, Saracens.
Orlando for Newcastle. You had Rory Hutchinson for Northampton, Scottish, up against Rob Dupree for Sale.
Yeah. Was it not Bedloe?
No, you had Andre Esterhazen for South African, up against Seb Atkinson.
English
prospect.
Yeah.
And for Leicester, you had Solomon Okata up against Will Butt.
So Will Butt is, but he's a rested team.
Rested team. So realistically, you had three. Ordinarily, I would suggest you have... Yeah.
About that.
The maximum you have is about three, ordinarily.
Yes.
In any given week. So for all of the fact that the Premiership is there and the whole point about this player, the professional game agreement is about closing the ties, making it more of a partnership between Premiership and international rugby, there are certain positions on the pitch where the Premiership is, I would argue, not just not helping, holding back the national team.
I bet, so it wouldn't be difficult to do. You could track nationality, you just need to do it binary. Nationality per position across the league, like throughout the 18 rounds, and I have no doubt that inside centre would be the worst for English. Because all you do is say, was the player playing in shirt one, shirt two, shirt three, was the player English? yes or no across each position through the 18 games.
Hang on. Is there some kind of
someone listening will do that for us? Please email contact@gmail.com.
Just hold on a second. Just hold on a second, right? Is there some sort of smart permitting auction that we can do for positions? And what I mean by that is, at the start of the season, maybe you've got, you can get how many foreign players? You can get as many foreign players as you like, but you can get certain foreign players in certain positions.
So, to like the Irish system.
Yeah, very similar, except you somehow buy the permit for a 12. Well, the problem is, if you buy a 13, you can also play 12.
Yeah.
Even if you, it works for the Irish.
Even if you limited it to...
Like I think I made the point the other week. I don't know how explicit the Irish system is. Yeah. Like, is it explicitly written down you, there can only be one 12, 13.
And also,
there's not owners willing to contest it.
Yes, that's very true. And
you
there.
Are the IRFU.
I like the idea that there are many positions where you would probably got every player was English this weekend. I don't know. But
there's probably.
Or nine out of 10.
Yeah. Some of the positions will be like scrum half, hooker, I have no doubt. Back rows, wingers, they will be.
Yeah.
Majority and English. EQP.
I've got it.
So I don't know about the permit, because... Yeah, go on.
It's not to buy a foreign player, it's to play a homegrown player. So if you... Yeah, so if you have... Okay, I'm just... You're getting this idea live. If you put an English player in a 12 shirt... consistently throughout the entire season, right? You then have removed the average cost of a player from your entire cap.
So is it only the 12 shirt? Because so it, 12
I was just
is,
about to say, how could you use a carrot, not a stick?
Well, because it's...
You could give extra EQP credit.
So you get... But then positions. Yeah, you're going to have to weigh the positions because you already obviously get the EQP.
That's what you do.
And the homegrown credits.
And I'm all for that because I think that should be Steve Borthwick's decision. He should say tight head prop, 12. He's allowed to pick maybe three or four positions that you can that the RFU will give even more money. And it should come from the RFU.
An incentive, yeah.
It should come from the RFU, not from Premiership Rugby's coffers.
Yeah, so it's a bounty system, right? So you get an extra... No. You get £200,000 in cash, right, which is excluded from your salary cap.
In a brown envelope.
So currently you get cash, which is not excluded from the salary cap, and you get credits, which is your cash, which will be excluded from salary cap. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're just allowed to spend more.
And here's what we do with it, right? At the end of a season, the directors of rugby, you get there's a pot of money for tight head prop. Pot of money for inside centre. Let's say there'd be two positions would be a massive. It's in hugely in the national interest, England rugby's interest to have those positions. So even let's say it's £1 million. Then what you do is you get the directors of rugby of the teams that have achieved that quota. You put them in the crystal ball thing, and you put the cash in through the letterbox and have them fight amongst it. And you televise that.
That's one. I mean, why have you have to ask? Why have you sacked your overweight fat director of rugby and replaced him with this young athletic one? Like
LeBron James for two days is your director of rugby.
Why is this? I don't understand it. Yes, it's coming together nicely now. So maybe the pot for positions. Let's just say they've got £1 million. Right, in this pot. And the RFU can only use it for two positions, say, right, or three positions.
Well, maybe Steve Borthwick can allocate that as he wishes.
Yeah, so he's like, okay,
with a limit.
We need a second row. And we need a centre.
Inside centre, tight head prop, and blindside flanker.
So then, right? So then at the start of the season, you say every club plays an English player in all of those positions. They are all still in the draw for all those positions. Next week, two clubs do not play a foreigner in 6 and play a foreigner at 12. They are out of contention for those two positions. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And as the season goes on, maybe you're left with nobody left in any of the positions, but only two clubs have got 12s going into the final week of the season. As things stand, they're on for £500,000 each for next season. and then there's an injured centre, what do? Do you play a kid?
You got to play the kids.
Do you play a kid?
Half a million.
And he might have a stormer and...
Send the kids in.
And then he gets his England cap.
Yeah. So you would have to put in some T's and C's so that you couldn't have, I don't know, like Owen Farrell running out with a number 3 on his back.
No, but... With the number 12 on his back, absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But the number 3 on his back, well, I mean, guess it's up to you.
Yeah. you couldn't have too much fluidity like the... But how come the guy wearing 6 is packing down his second row? Well, it just
is.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Oh well, hang on. I'm trying to think this through. There'll be some great gamesmanship going on. I would send that to arbitration. There needs to be an arbitration panel. That is not a legitimate decision. Yeah. Therefore, you don't get it. And as it's our gift, the £1 million, why should there be an arbitration situation?
Well, you need a commissioner to be the sole authority on such matters.
Yes, perfect. I think
Austin Healey.
What if? Okay, here's a great scenario for you. What if you've got your 12, and he's played every game this season, and you're about to win the bounty, but then Scotland offer him a guaranteed match day situation? What happens then? This is a wonderful wrinkle to rugby.
There's something there.
There is, isn't there?
I think the principle of extra money to incentivise. Because England have got a massive issue. And we've had two World Cup finals, two World Cups in a row where the scrum has undone us.
Yeah.
We've had a long-standing issue at 12, which has massively affected the way that the team plays and what the options of the coaches has been. Mm. And we can't just go on again the next 3-4 years and not solve those issues.
Yeah, and it means you've got almost too much talent at 13 that you can't play, and you've got to either fudge them to get someone like Marchand on the wing or fudge Manu or Slade at 12. You can't play all the talent you've got in some positions, but you've not got anywhere near enough talent in others.
Yeah, this is where the hybrid contract potential comes in, because there would be a negotiation to be had. And hey, Northampton Saints might disagree, but I've said for ages now, Tommy Freeman 12. And that if I was Steve Borthwick, I might be saying I want to just do a deal with Northampton where he plays 12,
although,
and give them money which is outside of the salary cap towards his salary.
Although I do rate Dingers, I think. Well, who's just re-signed as well? I think he's a very good player.
Dingwall that re-signed, not Freeman. Or did both do it?
Dingwall's re-signed. There's been a load of announcements on re-signing, but Dingwall definitely today. Oh, I read it today.
I love solving rugby's problems in the space of 2 minutes. So easy, isn't it?
Perfect. So uh-oh. Leinster 21, Ulster 22.
Well,
as it currently stands, with 15 minutes to go.
Oh, not again, Ulster.
Come on.
Okay, so...
go on.
Here's my thought. We've given our listeners more than enough rugby content. They should be very, very grateful. Well, let's do the next week's fixtures and then wrap this up.
Perfect.
Although, can I just tease something? I think in a few weeks' time, Tim, maybe 8 weeks' time, who knows? We're going to release our Embarrassing DORs Patreon podcast to the masses, because I thought it was so good.
It was,
if I say so myself.
Quite good fun.
Well, so good. It was so much fun.
It was fun to do. It might be terrible, but it was fun to do.
Yeah, we enjoyed it.
I'll tell you what, I want to finish off with this email from Martin, who's taken the trouble to email us. contact.tedchasers@gmail.com. Incidentally, I was just looking and there was a bunch of great emails. Max Armstrong, Exeter fan, has just pointed out Jacques Vermeulen will have been in England 5 years in the spring. This coming spring. And he also said, because we mentioned Richard Capstick last week, Capstick, Chunza and Hodge are all due to return very soon. So he's enthusiastic about the future.
Good.
We had people talking about the how poor Premiership Rugby TV is. They just chuck the whole games up on there rather than having any sort of curation of it. And what rugby really needs is like a match of the day type show.
So there's a podcast that I listen to, and I don't know how they do it, but they have their podcast in chapters. And, never really thought of this as a big deal, but now I've got access to it, it's really, really important. And I think these little things in rugby are, for an 80-minute game, probably, 100 minutes of coverage, it is important. The BT Sports app used to have that, didn't it? It used to be able to zoom in on fights. It used to have a little POW thing, a little impact symbol. So yeah, I think Premiership Rugby needs to get a grip of that, because the experience of that player is not good enough. You can't skip forward 10 seconds. You can't do anything.
Yeah. And also some of it has no commentary. And just people aren't just going to watch a whole 80-minute game with ambient stadium sound.
No.
Yeah, so there needs to be a bit more curation, I think. It's almost like they should invest in some people that are good at making content already.
Goodness me.
Maybe even people experienced in YouTube and stuff with broadcasting backgrounds, but I doubt that.
Yeah.
I doubt they think really, of anything like that.
Yeah, a really diverse panel of people I think would be great.
Email in from Martin Spurgin, contactdeadchasers@gmail.com. Now, he's been on treatment for a brain tumour for a year.
This is the one I wanted to read. Thank you.
And he said, due to my previously very heavy driving sales job, my entire pool of mates are from my CrossFit box, which is also a half an hour drive away. I'm not allowed to drive now until probably 2025. Consequently, listening to you guys talk about rugby with snippets of CrossFit mentioned in is helping fill the lonely void. Well, Martin, keep on keeping on, fella, and great to have you listening, and wish you all the best 2024 with that recovery and the treatment. He says, anyway, my question is, I've been actively watching rugby since I was a teenager in the 2000s, but I haven't followed the Premiership. While I still played, I kept it local. Then at uni, it was internationals, and due to living with two Welsh girls mad into their rugby...
All right, brag.
...followed what was then the Guinness League. Oh, I don't remember it being a Guinness League. I remember the Rabo Direct.
No, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, Guinness for...
Yeah. And then it was the Magnus League for a bit.
Yeah, Magnus for quite a while.
No, it was Guinness. I remember... That wasn't so long ago. It was after Magnus, I'm sure it was.
Yeah. I mean, no, I don't doubt it. He says, so I've never had a Premiership club to follow. Since the World Cup, I decided I'm in and should pick a team. I'm out in East Yorkshire, so geographically, I'm out in the wilderness as Prem team true. Go.
Mm.
Similarly, how you were taking pitches on French teams recently, who would each of you pitch to a neutral looking for a team to actively follow? I'm essentially looking for a bit of enjoyment in a few years. I have left till my tumour finishes me off. What?
Well, get watching some rugby then. I don't know.
Definitely watch some rugby, Martin.
My goodness, Martin. The way he's put that so casually. Mate, I really, first and foremost, I hope the treatment is successful and goes well. Anyway.
Well, I mean, my overwhelming thought here is make sure you pick wisely. You don't want to spend 2 years supporting Wasps.
He said it doesn't need to be the winningest team, but good rugby skills and exciting games to watch are the dilemma I'm facing. Each week I change my mind on who to follow. One week I'm at Quinn, all for Quinns. Next I'm all over the West Country teams. Generally, I tend to watch it all at the moment, but I have to get a job again soon to pay for my one-year-old's place at nursery once I lose the financial independence support I've been on through my treatment. Keep up the good work, guys. So this is what I was initially going to say is we need to pick a team that you can get to. But I still think that's in the back of my mind in the future. I'm hoping that there's a long future of being able to get to a ground, and that was in my mind, Martin.
Mm.
So I actually don't think it's that important going to the grounds, because I used to go sail every single week and I haven't done for a while. I did really enjoy it and I still enjoy it when I go. I think it's a really good experience, and you know, but it doesn't... Watching rugby on TV is a pretty good experience. And when I've gone drinking or whatnot, watching internationals, I just haven't enjoyed it nearly as much as being at the stadium. Sail is different. I did enjoy that a lot. So I don't think it's necessarily that important. And also, if you want to watch it every week, the stadium experience is a bloody big effort, because you've got to leave, what, a couple of hours before, a couple of hours travelling back?
Well, if he's in East Yorkshire as well,
yeah,
he's got best an hour and a half, depending on whereabouts in East Yorkshire, but probably an hour and a half to 2 hours to sail Newcastle and Leicester.
Yeah, so been that, it's just not important. And also, we could have made other recommendations for non-Premiership teams, but that explicitly was not asked for. So... Based on that, the club I've really enjoyed following, if I was a neutral, would be Gloucester. I love Gloucester. I just think it's a tough club. It's kind of got the right kind of foundations. I don't know what it is, but they're not good enough to be good, and they're not bad enough to be terrible. So it's always kind of like this roller coaster of, will we be good this year? Will we be not good this year?
It's always next year.
It's always next year, which is great. And you get a win against Bath, and everything seems great. Everything.
What I do like about Gloucester is that is a proper working class town.
It is, isn't it?
They've got a lot of fans that are from agricultural communities, from generation after generation after generation, father, grandfather. Like, you've got lots of people who will have been taken to the ground by their dad. So it's like a proper old school rugby club. I went to Gloucester a couple of weeks back, and I love going to King's Home. I love that club. I agree with you.
There we go. I mean, there's plenty of clubs I've not been to. In fact, most clubs I don't think I've been to. I've always enjoyed myself at Harlequins. I've always, always liked it there. I think that's a real...
And Harlequins...
It's good to follow.
Harlequins play a more attractive brand of rugby, yeah. if that's what you're interested in. Mm. They're more likely to win anything, although Martin does say explicitly they don't have to be the winningest
team. Yeah. I would say for financial solvency, Northampton Saints, which is an important consideration given recent years.
It is.
They're most likely to still exist in any given period of time.
Courtney Laws also plays for them.
For now.
And they've got some very good young English talent. They play the game a really nice way.
So hold on. So on our shortlist so far, I'm putting Northampton Saints on the shortlist because they're doing that. They a bit like Gloucester. They haven't actually won the trophies, but they do a lot of things right. Look at the English talent that they're producing.
Trophies. Gloucester have got none.
Correct.
Yeah, no, because they won the league, but they didn't win the final, did they?
Yeah,
they've got no European
in recent years. Then
they've got no European pedigree.
Northampton's
got at least one. They've got one, and
have Gloucester not won the Challenge Cup?
They might have won a Challenge Cup. Does that really count?
Not really.
Northampton have won the big one.
Yeah, and they've got to the final another time.
Yeah.
So Northampton are definitely the bigger of the two clubs.
Oh yeah, no question. So Gloucester, Northampton. Should we put another one on our shortlist? There's only 10 teams. If you were going to have another spot on a shortlist, Northampton, Gloucester, and
there's some fantastic clubs. I love the whole experience of going to Bath. Yeah, because you get to go to Bath.
But that's not part of it, though, is it?
No.
It's not going to it. The one I was going to chuck onto the shortlist, bearing in mind what is bubbling now and the story they've already gone through, Exeter.
If I
was going to pick a team to support now, because London Irish weren't my team as such, but they were the team that I felt strongest about, only because my brother played for them, but that was the team that I kind of had a soft spot for. But if I was going to pick one now, I think I'd probably pick Exeter.
Don't get me wrong. I love Exeter. I mean, to be honest, I like all the teams in the Premiership, with the exception of Newcastle and Bristol. So I like 8 out of 10. And I actually like Bristol. I just don't like the director of rugby. So all in all, they've all got really, really good stories. So you've got to pick the one which matches you. As for Exeter, is it not a little bit like buying Amazon stock now rather than when Jeff Bezos was driving the vans?
Well, but it's your back... Because it's the rebuild, so you're getting in on the ground floor of the rebuild,
and it's not about
charge.
It's not trying to pick the winner in 2 years' time, is it? This is about picking the club that you would root for, and like you would have the strongest feeling about.
Do you know what the nice thing is about Exeter, and I find myself rooting for them all the time, is how regularly they are targeted by morons, and how it doesn't. I mean, that is a real thing. It gives. Do you know, like we talk about Everton and how they've really rallied round because there's something to fight for there. The injustice. There is something about Exeter which is, basically they've gone from everyone's second favourite club to a club widely derided by, you know, the chattering classes. I love them for it. And all they care about is, are they popular to the people of Exeter? And there's something to be said about that, and I love it.
Exeter's a good shout.
It's a great shout, Exeter.
But Bath has got a beautiful kit, amazing
Bath
ground.
And well.
This is the
so
Bath.
So much history.
And this is Bath where they could actually be good. They could actually, after years and years of, they fell from the biggest club in rugby, to just years of, they had loads of talent, but could just never
play.
Yeah, money, talent.
And lots of directors of rugby.
Could never put it together.
Do you like Manchester United, yes or no? If the answer is yes, support Bath.
I can't help thinking with Bath, I can't get past thinking with Bath that it is still built on foundations of sand. Finn Russell goes.
Oh, completely.
It all comes tumbling down.
Completely.
Yeah, but like
that's it'll be.
Everyone,
it's going to be a good few years.
Yeah.
As in Finn Russell, the next 3 years, it's going to be incredibly exciting, and then it will be. You'll be despondent for the rest of the Bath era.
So based on that, Tim, why don't we pick a team based on the worst starting fly half? Because theoretically, they're most sustainable. Harvey Skinner.
That's not a bad shout.
I don't mean to be nasty to Harvey Skinner. He's
I mean, we're ignoring Newcastle Falcons.
Yes. We've ruled out Newcastle.
Leaving them out.
So you can't pick Pat Saracens. You can't pick Sale. You can't pick Bath. You can't pick Tigers.
Can't pick Harlequins.
Can't pick Harlequins. You're left with...
Gloucester.
Bristol.
So, who's the worst off? Hastings?
Sheedy.
Skinner.
And Finn Smith. We didn't mention him. So.
Yeah, but Finn Smith is... I think he's yeah, so a legit
those
player.
Three. So based on this, Sheedy's the worst fly half in that lot.
Probably.
It's a great rugby system.
He's an international, Bristol. Though.
So is Hastings.
Skinner's he is. Not. Skinner
he's
is not.
The only non-international. Well, not the only non-international. He might be the only non-international.
Finn Smith's not capped yet, is he?
He will be. That's a massive.
Yeah, so, he will be.
JB, just want to summarise this. Martin, who is having treatment for a brain tumour, you might well be saying, follow Bristol.
Yeah, maybe I'm the one with the brain tumour.
Yeah, based purely on... Pick the team with the worst fly half because they're most disabled.
You ask about three morons. A good question. What did you expect to happen? This poor man has emailed in asking for advice on which team to support, and what we've told him is support the team with the worst fly half. Well, there you go.
Perfect.
Bristol Bears.
I would say Exeter, but if there's any chance that you know you're going to want to follow this support through and be a regular match day goer, I would not choose Exeter for you because
Northampton,
North Yorkshire to Exeter is not great. So
it's a long way to go anywhere. So if you're going to go properly. At least
go big.
At least it's long enough to make a weekend out of it. And Exeter's a lovely town.
But Northampton, I'm minded to say Northampton. So.
What? So you can stay opposite Express Lift Tower.
Yeah, it's true. It's not a great place to go.
I think Exeter.
You can buy some nice shoes in Northampton.
Yeah, you can fly down there because it's far enough to fly. So actually, it's the beta paradox. Are you in a better situation because it's further away? Everything else you've got to drive. So you can fly there.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you're there, you're in beautiful Devon. You can stay there for a night or two. You do it once a year. What? This is great. Got the second worst fly half in the league to root for.
You've got a hell of a lot of young talent coming through. Some of which is Welsh, maybe disappearing if the WRU get their mitts on them.
You cannot fly from Leeds Bradford to Exeter anymore.
No, it'd have
to
be.
You can't fly from Manchester to Exeter anymore.
Can you not?
No, because since Flybe went under.
Didn't we do it?
We did Newquay.
You did Newquay, Loganair to Newquay.
Yeah, because Loganair took the Edinburgh routes as well after Flybe.
Yeah, so you can't fly to Exeter anymore. So.
Well, that was a wonderful segment, boys.
Devastating. We didn't really get any closer.
Well, we gave three options.
What would you, if you had to pick one, JB, what would you go for?
Sale Sharks.
I would have said Sale Sharks. Given the parameters, they can't have Sale Sharks. Fly off's too good. So I would have started with Gloucester, but I've taught myself into Exeter now.
I think I'd go Saints.
I think I'd go Gloucester.
Let us know.
There you go. Oh, that's good. Games next week. How are Ulster getting on?
Currently, 21, Leinster 22, Ulster. Full time.
Ulster 1.
FT.
Oh, get
in. Just refresh. Yes.
Yeah, the boys.
Have that. Rest your team at your peril, Nienaber.
Fascinating. So, real rugby next week. Yes!
Oh, and Harry Byrne overcooks his kick to touch for full time.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
There we go.
Oh, what a wonderful bit of red meat to start the weekend with. An absolute beatdown of epic proportion and never-ending fist fest pounding into the faces of the Bears.
Selby Bristol?
Visit Sale.
And slightly further north... Harlequins travelling to Newcastle Falcons might be similar.
Yeah, Harlequins effectively going for what, an opposed run through?
Something like that.
That'll be an absolute waste of time. The first game though is going to be glorious, absolutely glorious. Sale to win by not a huge margin. It's not going to be a huge points toll, but it will be a huge physical toll. I suspect 15 point win, but the Bristol Bears will feel like it's a lot more.
Sale don't score many points, so a 15 point win would almost get them back in the black on their points difference.
Yes, go on Sale.
So I'm going Harlequins will win away, Sale will win at home on to Saturday.
Although can I just make one observation about this game, one of the more entertaining aspects will be, will it be Robert Dupreuil or Rob Dupreuil that shows up against Vaca Tower?
Yeah, hopefully he's wearing 13.
I want to see Rob Dupreuil in third. He's either going to close him down completely, or it's going to be one of the greatest displays of running rugby you've ever seen.
Has he ever played for South Africa? Maybe he's England's answer
yes,
at 12.
Yes, two caps at 10.
Oh, well. Mm. I've only just noticed. I mean, I've seen
at
the...
10.
I've seen the Exeter logo a number of times. Preferred the old one, but the new one's fine. But it's got a star on it.
As it should do.
For the
champion,
but none of the other Champions Cup winners have got a star incorporated into their badge.
I think that... Saracens
certainly do on their kit.
They put it on their kit. Exeter is incorporated within the logo.
Because they redid the logo after. Yeah, why not?
Hang on, does that mean if they win a second one, it will be on the shirt?
Unless they redesign that
logo. They'll have to redesign the logo again.
They're not planning on winning another one.
There'll be people with pitchforks. You've won it twice, and you've only got one star.
Single star appropriation. Losers.
So, Exeter against Saints... I'm going to go for Exeter at home. Although
that's a big game.
Could top of the table Northampton end Exeter's home run?
Well, not only that, I seem to think Northampton have had the run of rub of the green against Exeter at Sandy Park for a few years.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I'm sure this is the case. Actually,
it's a shame. Actually, the two Saturday fixtures are dynamite.
They are
both at the same time.
Except for the Newcastle fixtures. All of the fixtures are really good, man.
Because Leicester v Saracens is the televised game, but I'd quite like to watch Exeter Saints.
Yeah. Mm. So, I think Saints.
That home run of over a year now is something, isn't it?
I feel Exeter have got... I don't know. That's a tough one to call. I think Leicester will batter Saracens, though.
I'm going to go Exeter and Leicester to win.
Yeah. Tigers at home. I think. Although Saracens, they often pull off... big special results against big teams.
Do you know they do? But I just don't know if this is like one Jenga piece removed too many for them.
I feel like they are getting there.
Does an Alex Clary led scrum deal well with Montoya and co?
Maybe not.
That's a good matchup, and that's where it all starts, and that's probably where it all finish. And Leicester are going to absolutely batter them. I'm looking forward to that one. And then Sunday is fireworks personified.
Bath Gloucester dynamite.
Isn't it?
So who should be on comms? The JB rule of comms?
Oh, yeah, because Sam Warburton's still on comms. I mean, I know he's a great player. He should not be on Premiership comms ever. He probably shouldn't even be on European comms because his club record is woeful. Well, there's no other word for it. It's woeful.
Well, just he's never played in the Premiership. I actually thought it's worth, and this will be a... He's contracted to a certain number of days per season... And that's the contract that he has with TNT Sport. It'll be the same with Brian O'Driscoll because you see Brian O'Driscoll popping up on...
Yeah, I don't want to say it.
...on Premiership Rugby, but it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. That
they should be front and centre on European weekends, and I cannot wait to hear
Bod should. But I'd actually...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even... Like, Sam Warburton is an international animal. Like, that's how his whole career was. Save him for the ITV and the BBC and throw him on there because that's where he thrives.
It sort of goes back to Stuart Hogg and stuff. Stuart Hogg never talks about his family, so who cares?
Yeah.
Like, Sam Warburton, like...
Tell me, Sam.
Never played in the Premiership.
Yeah.
So...
But it's a legitimate point, isn't it?
It is a legitimate point. I think I agree.
Tell me, Sam, how hard is it to win with Cardiff? Really hard. I've never done it. Like, what does it take to win a European Cup? No idea. Yeah, so I just don't want to see him there. Same for Bod during the Premiership, and same for anyone who's not played in the Premiership. So who would I have? I don't know actually. Off the top,
you can have Flats as a Bath representative.
Of course, you would. Yeah, Flats. And
do you know who's quite entertaining? Who I worked with a few weeks ago, Matt Banahan's quite good fun.
Banners is a good shout.
He's done both.
Yeah,
easy.
That makes him hard.
Mike Tindall.
That makes it hard to be partisan, though.
Tindall.
He'll be your both. Oh, he's a Bath man more than he's a Gloucester man, but who's like Gloucester through and through that you'd love to see chatting?
Not Phil Vickery. And the reason I say not Phil Vickery is because he didn't have a great World Cup a few World Cups ago. Oh, actually, maybe Phil Vickery because he is partisan. Yeah, why not? Somebody. I don't know. Ryan Lamb. I would Ryan Lyman is a genuinely funny bloke. He knows a lot about rugby. He's currently coaching. He's
he'll be all Plymouth, the Premiership, won't he?
And for La Rochelle.
I'd get Freddie Burns back from Japan.
Freddie Burns is a good shout. Yeah,
those are good ones.
Yeah.
Mm. I was thinking about the JB rule of commentating, which I'm definitely not as proud. I like it for big game, but I'm nowhere near as precious. I like listening to Warburton and Bod because I think they're good.
Outstanding. They're brilliant.
I like them on the Premiership.
They are
they
okay.
Can,
yeah,
they can write about it. You know, and actually, podcast about it. They can do all sorts. But like this is.
But in the
no, well, sorry. You make your point. One thing I will say again, having worked with both of them, you don't need to have worked with them. This is just a point. It's self evident when you watch them.
Yeah.
They do the work.
Yeah.
Yes.
They, in a way that some journalists and people whose job is supposedly watching the Premiership don't seem to keep up to speed. They watch and analyse and know their shit.
Yeah, that is very true.
Yeah, definitely. But I was thinking about the JB rule during Northampton Saints sale, which I mentioned to you when we went out for a beer. I was thinking, you could have Big Luth, you could have... what's his name? The fullback, scrum half turn fullback, Foden, Ben Foden.
Yeah.
Ashton, who was working the game. Yeah. And then I thought about Brian Mujati.
What's happened to Muj?
Well, we had this good discussion.
This was exactly my question. I asked JB, I thought he might be in the know. Because I was thinking about this JB problem and I thought, what's happened to him? Because I used to watch his YouTube videos.
Yeah.
I found them.
He's brewing.
Brewing and he's barbecuing and he's gymming. Things that I like, and I just always found him entertaining. So he last recorded a video 6 years ago.
Wow.
So there's been nothing. And I did a little search for kind of what has happened to Brian Mujati in the last couple of years. Results. Well, the results were nothing. Nothing conclusive was found, but other people have asked this kind of question on Reddit, and there was no clear answer. So I guess my question is, if you know... please email us, contact eggchasers@gmail.com, and just let us know, hopefully with some good positive news. Yeah, definitely.
He's not posting on any of his socials for quite a while, by the look of it. Yeah, I think he was probably ahead of his time a little bit with the...
true enigmas.
He got arrested in Toulon, didn't he?
Did he?
Because you know what other thing other than the rugby team Toulon is famous for?
Navy.
Yeah.
What was he doing? Oh, was he flying a drone over ships?
Flying a drone.
Yes.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah. His drone wandered too close to Navy base.
By a mirage or something. Yeah.
but he was a really, really interesting character. And I'd just keen to hear how he's doing, and hopefully he's doing well. And hopefully it's a mundane, he's just...
Maybe he's like...
taking a back step and just a family man and happy with his...
Maybe he's like Jay from Five, just said goodbye and we never saw him again.
Could well be.
Just a little, I don't know how true this is, a little message to a question someone's put online. It's about 10 months ago, someone said, he's back in Northampton since he finished in France. I see him training at the gym early mornings. Just looks like a normal bloke now.
I mean, he won't look like a normal bloke because he'll still be huge.
There'll be questions to be asked if he does. Lots of questions. I know a guy that will know.
We should... well, if there was a... Oh, Matt, do you remember the video that the Sale put up when he joined? They had like a sniffer dog and a security guard walking around a load of shipping containers. And then they opened one of them and Brian Mujati burst out.
I don't remember that.
Hold on. Here you go. Got it here.
Oh.
Here you go, watch it. See, restricted area. Security guard and the dog looking around. There you go, men in hard hats with high-vis jackets.
Solid.
What's that noise? There's something, what's going on over here?
Intimidating.
There's a forklift truck going over to a shipping container. It's all dark with flashlight only.
Eerie siren.
Shipping container being lowered down to the ground.
Is this how we travel from club to club, is it?
Close up on the dock.
Oh my God, that's our shipping container. Right next to it.
Oh, they're standing back. The ominous music.
Oh, is that like a taser?
Yeah, taser's at the ready.
Probably wise, all things considered. Come on, come on.
A figure rises.
Oh, the traps. Look at those traps.
Come on. Oh, sail! Oh, wow, a sail shark's out of
it. Sail sharks did
bloody
that.
Bloody hell, that's really good.
That is cool. And that was, so he was Northampton, he was key to that Northampton scrum.
I tell you where he came from before.
And then it was Racing, yeah, because the Northampton scrum destroyed the Racing scrum on at least one occasion. And so they just bought
him
and Tongawea. Yeah. We'll take him.
Ooh, yeah. So Tongawea ended up in Bedford, I want to say.
Amptill, I think.
Yeah, you're all right, Amptill.
That video was 8 years ago.
Wow! So
video of that, in fairness, that was some money.
It was a decent video. So that was under the Dimes' watch.
Cost more money than most of their squad 8 years ago. Have you got the Jonathan Mills video there when he was announced? That was dynamite. The Lou Reed one. You must have the Lou Reed video.
It's a fortnight till Europe as well. So
fortnight until we go to watch Bayonne play in the Gardens. Now we've had an invite from a local team to do something on a Saturday, go and either watch them or join them for the Bayonne game in Northampton. I don't know which, so I'll have to read the email again.
Oh, okay. Well, I need to get back onto the fella from Northampton and sort that out, because I think actually on that weekend you two will have to go on your own, because I'm in...
No, not a big Bayonne fan though.
I'm in Edinburgh.
Oh, you're working
Bayonne in Edinburgh.
Yeah, who are they playing? I can't remember. They've got a game. Anyway, but well, yes.
We can get there and back in the night. Should we do that?
Yeah.
Back in the night, yeah.
It's a couple of hours. It's easy.
Yeah.
You don't want to stay in Northampton anyway. It's not going on there.
No, because actually, by the time we finish, it's going to be like, go there and then stop over Birmingham on the way back, because that was a great night.
Could do.
Yeah. I was going to say,
we'll work it out.
You need to go somewhere else for a night out. I don't know, maybe Northampton. I don't know. Ask Big Courts.
Yeah, we'll ask him.
But any other... it's only a few weeks as well until... We have our Egg Chasers weekend in Paris.
In Paris. Cannot wait for that.
And JB, I think you're on board for that now, aren't you?
Emming and Oring.
Racing 92 versus Toulouse in the Thunderdome.
I tell you what did happen to me this week. My daughter asked my wife if she could Google herself. So nothing showed up for the two girls. Bits showed up for my wife. Oh my word, the stuff that showed up for me, we had to stop reading to the girls.
I've once read a Reddit thread.
Oh my word,
which is unbelievable.
I mean I said
I do not tell me what is on that thread.
Yeah, do not read that
if
thread.
If you want to know one place on the internet that is just not real, it's Reddit. It is a strange place.
Incredible. So she started telling me these things. I was like, just don't tell me. They're not suitable to read to children, which kind of means I'm doing a good job, I think. That, to me, is the ultimate barometer. You got absolutely smashed on Reddit.
Did I?
Yeah, because your brother's an MP.
Oh, yes. I was just thinking it.
Don't read it.
You Google stuff about that, particularly on Twitter, on X.
I'll show you one thing that's been... This has been attributed... It's got your name under it. That photograph... has been attributed to you.
What is it?
It's a guy in Didsbury Toc H gear lying like one of those French girls in the Titanic.
Lying kind of like you're lying right now, yeah. JP.
Draw me like one of your French girls.
Oh, that's my friend Luke. Luke the Duke. Well, so he played...
he's impersonating you on Twitter.
No, he played... inside centre for us, but he used to play on the wing for Vale Loon. Cracking player. And I think he's playing up at Garstang now. And do you know who he's playing with? Doug Dale's brother, who is the coach.
Oh, nice. Oh, there's one more picture. I can't let this go. Just on the photographs, there's one more where you'll be much more happy. You'll be much happier about this photograph being attributed to you, because it's...
is it The Rock?
It's got your name, and it's a picture of the Didsbury Toc H scrum. Absolutely obliterating what looks like maybe Vale of Loon, although there's a lot
Old Winions.
Old Winions,
yeah.
where the hooker is in the air.
Yeah, that is me next to my dear friend who I've not seen for too long, actually, Harry Jones, who is one of the single best natural rugby players I have ever met in my life. He showed up to our club and basically had an old T-shirt on, some nondescript shorts, and he's about, at the time, about 85 kilograms. No one looked at him twice. Turns out he is an unbelievable player.
Really?
Yeah. Hits like a hammer, runs like a train.
Look at...
Awesome.
Look at that old Williams front row.
That is awesome. That is a hell. that is a hell of a scrum.
That's a great picture. Just Google Jonathan Beardmore if you want to see it.
Don't read anything on Reddit.
I'm very proud of my internet footprint.
Right, let's finish this pod. I'm going to go home and get some food.
Oh, your address is on there in the company's house.
Look, the guys that say those things about Reddit are more than welcome to come around my house. I don't think they will, but they're more than welcome. I was thinking about this, right? I've never, ever had any issue with anyone in real
life. In real life, yeah.
Who was listening to podcast, except for one time. Do you remember this? And do you remember where we were?
In Marseille.
In Marseille. Some guy came up to me and called me, I don't know what he said. He said I'm a dickhead or I can't remember what he said. And in return, I threatened to throw him down the stairs and he went away. So that's just how it goes.
And on that bombshell, contact eggchasers@gmail.com. More content at patreon.com/eggchasers, where you can find that, as JB mentioned, very entertaining pre-Christmas, ever so slightly drink-inspired and fueled extra pod, which may well get released generally sometime very soon. In the meantime, let the boys end.
Let the boys end.
Beautiful.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.